Hey friends, I'm Hattie O'Neill and this is Eerie. This week I watched two movies that relate to the main topic. First, I watched Cry of the Banshee from 1970. It has a 5.6 out of 10 stars on IMDb. Here is the synopsis. Monomaniacal witch hunter Lord Edward Whitman, played by Vincent Price, who cruelly persecutes the peasants in his corner of Elizabethan England. If you hear ruckus, I'm sorry, it's my dog playing. Oh my goodness. In his corner of Elizabethan England, manufacturing charges and dealing out punishment without regard to justice. While trying to wipe out a coven of witches, he fails to take into account the possibility that real witches might have real power. He is unprepared when Una, played by Elizabeth Bergner, the head of the coven, transforms a trusted member of the Whitman's household into a vehicle of demonic vengeance. This movie, for me, was kind of ridiculous in my opinion. The movie title is way wrong. Okay, so like, at one point you hear what is meant to be the sound of a banshee cry. And at another point, they have keening women. And I'll reference, you'll hear more about that later in the episode. But essentially they're women who are paid to cry at a funeral for one of high status. However, that was a Celtic or Irish tradition and would not have been utilized by the English nobles. So, nice thought, but super fucking wrong. Okay. The acting wasn't great. I mean, okay, so like in my opinion, a lot of 70s horror films just have like pointless nudity. At one point in this film, it looked like it was the beginning of some kind of like weird BDSM shame or some kind of weird party. Pretty much it was just all around not what I look for in a movie, whether it's a horror movie or not. There was also, like, sexual assault in the movie, which was completely unnecessary, though I know that they've put that into a lot of, quote-unquote horror films from that time period. It didn't age well. How about that? We'll just leave it at that. It did not age well. Above all, I feel like my frustration with this film, it had nothing to do with the title whatsoever, other than those two key moments where you hear a banshee cry and there is a historical reference to keening women. That's the only thing to do with banshees in the entire film. Everything else has to do with witches and werewolves, so they probably could have come up with a more fitting name. I can't say that I would put that on my watch again list, like, ever. I've definitely seen worse horror films, but I wouldn't watch it again. I feel like I would only give this film like a 1.5 out of 5 stars. And I feel like that's only because the story was coherent. Whether it was acted well or written well is a totally different matter. But, I mean, you could at least follow the story. So, 1.5. And that, I feel like that's me being generous. So, I don't know. So, the second film that I watched this week was Banshee Blacktop, an Irish ghost story from 2016. Its tagline is, "You cannot outrun what is already inside you." The synopsis is as follows. Police pick up a drifter in connection with the disappearance of a young couple on a remote windswept island. The drifter, a disgraced monk, turns tables on their investigators and relates a tale of madness, murder, and the supernatural. When I looked it up, this film is actually rated lower than the last one at 5.5 out of 10 stars on IMDb. Personally, I would heartily disagree with this rating, but I'm certain IMDb doesn't give a fuck what I think. Anywho, so first of all, I felt this film was far better. The shots in this film were breathtaking. The setting is beautiful. There's a beach, some ruins. I would say that it's definitely a slow burn type of film where you're trying to piece everything together throughout the film until basically the very end. But I felt overall that it was good. So essentially, this young couple is trying to escape the island because Deirdre believes she will go mad like her mother. Fionn accompanies her on the journey as he is quite taken with her and doesn't want her to go alone, which is quite a nice sentiment. By the film's end, you have pretty much nothing but pity for all of the people involved in this situation. I felt like the acting was pretty good. I felt like it was aesthetically pleasing to look at. Like, visually, it was just a nice movie to watch. I feel like I would probably give this film like a 3.5 out of 5. I would watch it again. So, yeah. There you have it. This episode, if you haven't figured it out already, is on the legend of the Banshee. Irish folklore concerning the Banshee can be traced back to the 8th century. According to legend, she will appear at night in the yard on your property or peering in your window, which I think is the creepier one. If I look out my window and I see a face, I'm gonna get the fuck out of there. Anywho, traditionally, she can be heard wailing or crying in an inhuman way that doesn't stop to breathe, or sometimes there is knocking heard instead of the wailing. When you hear her cries, you should check on your beloved ones, for she foretells of death. The legend states that banshees follow the five main families of Ireland: the O'Neills, the O'Briens, the O'Connors, the O'Gradys, and the Cavanaghs. If a banshee is seen, she has several forms that she can take. She can look like a shriveled old woman. Some accounts even say she's the size of a small child. Other times, she appears as a young, beautiful maiden with either flowing red or black hair. She typically is seen wearing green or black dresses. I've heard two different versions, and a gray funeral shroud. She's often seen combing her hair with a silver comb. However, if a banshee offers you a comb or you find one, do not take it. This means that you will perish. One of the strangest sightings I found is a beautiful woman who is either completely naked or only naked from the waist up. She has been decapitated, and she is carrying a bowl of blood. So that version is weird as shit, obviously. I didn't find very many accounts of that, so I don't know if that's just some kind of hearsay in the folklore. I have no idea. It was definitely not the common finding in what I've read, so I don't know. The etymology of the word banshee shows that it is an Anglican version of the Irish Gaelic words ban, which means woman, and shee, which means fairy, though some argue the original meaning of shee was the other world. Another version of the same thing is ban quinche, which literally translates to keening woman. The etymology of the word explains in part the importance that women had in ancient Ireland when it came to the death of people and mourning. Long ago, women were paid to keen or cry at funerals. Keening was a rhythmic wailing, crying, and singing. Often, only noble families could afford to pay for keening women, and it is believed that this is why the legend states that she follows the five families. Keening women were often unkempt, their hair was wild, they could walk barefoot, and generally stayed on the outskirts of society. As these women were on the outskirts of society, they were believed to be a link between this world and the other world. Ireland isn't the only country with a banshee legend. In Scotland, they have the washerwoman. If someone saw her washing the bloody clothes of a particular warrior, they knew the warrior from that clan would perish in battle. The sources that I found called her, please forgive me, my Scots Gaelic is terrible and I am actively learning, but don't hate me. Banshee, or I can't pronounce that one, and I'm gonna butcher it. I'm so sorry. There's also a different version that I found in some sources. Kinghi? I'm not sure. It looks a lot like Keening in Irish Gaelic, and the way the end of the word is spelled, it's kind of like big, but it's with an H, so I don't know if it's supposed to be Heeg. Keen Heeg. I'm not sure. I'm so sorry. Please don't hate me. I'm a third Scottish. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to learn native languages to my family. Okay, anywho, this version that I found, it states that she is seldom seen but often heard. It is said that she was heard during several evenings before the massacre of Glencoe, which occurred on the 13th of February, 1692. So I found a poem written about her. It was written in Scots Gaelic, but there was also an English translation, and I'm going to read the English translation because I know I'll just completely butcher the Scots Gaelic, so please don't come for me because I'm still learning. Okay, so little Kinhaeg of the Sorrow is pouring the tears of her eyes, weeping and wailing the fate of Clan Donald. Alas, my grief, that ye did not hear her cries. There is gloom and grief in the Mount of the Mist. There is weeping and calling in the Mount of the Mist. There is death and danger. There is maul and murder. There is blood spilling in the Mount of the Mist. I don't know. I just thought it was nice in a sad kind of way. Okay, so then I also found a story from 1935. Listed under Scottish folklore by Donald Mackenzie. So I'll just read it out to you and then, okay. The Kinhaeg was a banshee. She followed Clan Mackay and other clans in the ruins of Islay. I should have looked that one up. I apologize. When a death was going to happen in one of the clans, she would go to the sick man's house with a green shawl about her shoulders and give his family warning by raising a sad wail outside the door. As soon as the sick man's friends heard her voice, they lost all hope of his getting better. They had heard the Kinhae lamenting. Again, I'm very sorry for the pronunciation. And that was proof enough to them that his end was at hand. She has ceased to give warnings to the people of the Rhines. She was last heard at a house in that district many years ago. A sick man who was on his deathbed and his friends attending him. It was winter, and the night was wet and cold with rain and wind. She stood at the windward door of the house, and there she raised a low, melancholy wail. The family heard her mourning, and one of them so pitied her that he went out of the leeway door and left her an old plaid on the seat on the side of the door. He then returned within and cried to her, "Come to the sheltered side, poor woman, and cover yourself with a piece of my plaid." In an instant, the lamenting ceased, and from that time to this, the Kinhaeg has not been seen or heard in the Rhines. And again, I am so sorry because I'm sure I butchered the pronunciation of that. I haven't gotten to anything even remotely looking like that, so I'm so sorry. There is also a Welsh version. Groc y Rhibyn. I'm sorry. Again, I am not even learning Welsh, so I am so sorry. Or Witch of Rhibyn. She is far scarier than her counterparts, in my opinion. She has long black knotted hair, black teeth, bone thin arms and legs, pale skin, and sometimes leather wings? Question mark. She seems to warn the particular person of their imminent death. So that seems a wee bit scarier than the Celtic, or not necessarily Celtic, the Irish and Scottish version where she's warning the family. This one version seems to warn the individual of their imminent death. So, sorry, I misspoke. Okay, anywho. So, back to Ireland. Shane's Castle is thought to be the home of the O'Neill Banshee. It is located in Randallstown, County Antrim. It was originally called Edendovcarrick Castle and was taken by the English. It was later returned to the O'Neill clan by King James in 1607. Inside the castle, there is a stone carving of a head inset into one of the tower walls. The stone carving is called the Black Head of the O'Neills, or the Black Brow on the Rock. It is believed that the carving predates the castle by several hundred years. The legend is that if the head ever falls from its position, the O'Neill clan will come to an end. A room in Shane's castle was traditionally laid aside for the use of their banshee. And in one version that I found, it was claimed that her name is Maeveen, or the White Lady of Sorrow. Visitors at time have claimed to see the impression of someone sitting on the bed in her reserved room. This was clearly years and years ago. We can't go there now because it's in ruins. Anywho. In 1816, a large party was held at the castle, which caused the room to be used by a guest. A fire began in the banshee's room and burned down the main block of the castle. It is said that the banshee felt slighted by the sudden disregard for the long-held tradition. There is also a tale asserting that the O'Neills got their banshee quite by mistake. A warrior on his way home from battle happened upon a cow caught, or was tangled in a single hawthorn tree. Solitary hawthorn trees are sacred and belong to the fairies. The warrior freed the cow from the hawthorn. The fairies were enraged as the cow was now rightfully their property. In retaliation, the fairies stole the warrior's daughter as punishment. Upon returning home, the warrior realized that his daughter had been taken by the fairies to the bottom of the lake. The fairies allowed the girl to return to let her father know that she was safe, and that she could only return in order to warn of impending death in the family. It is now stated or believed that she haunts the great wood of Ulster, which grew near the castle along the shores of Loch Nee. So now I would like to read a few stories from the Irish Ghost Stories by St. John D. Seymour and Harry L. Nelligan. And this was originally published in the year 1926. So, yeah. I felt it was a little difficult to find good stories online because I felt like they were more embellished. So I was looking for something a little more closer to the time where people might have, I don't know, still believed. Of all Irish ghosts, fairies, or bogles, the Banshee, and I believe this was written by English people, sometimes called locally the Bochinthe or Bachinthe, is the best known to the general public indeed. Cross-channel visitors would class her with pigs, potatoes, and other fauna and flora of Ireland, and would expect her to make manifest her presence to them as being one of the sights of the country. She is a spirit with a lengthy pedigree, how lengthy no man can say, as its roots go back into the dim, mysterious past. The most famous banshee of ancient times was that attached to the kingly house of O'Brien. Avew, who haunted the rock of Craigley above Killaloe, near the old palace of Kincora, in AD 1014, was fought the Battle of Clontarf, sorry for the mispronunciations, from the aged king Brian Boru. Knew that he would never come away alive, for the previous night, Avil had appeared to him to tell him of his impending fate. The Banshee's method of foretelling death is olden times differed from that adopted by her at the present day. Now she wails and wrings her hands as a general rule, but in the old Irish tales she is found to be washing human heads and limbs or blood-stained clothes till the water is all dyed with human blood. This would take place before a battle, so it would seem that in course of centuries her attributes and characteristics have changed somewhat. Very different descriptions are given of her personal appearance. Sometimes she is young and beautiful, sometimes old and of a fearsome appearance. One writer describes her as a tall, thin woman with uncovered head and long hair that floated around her shoulders, attired in something which seemed either a loose white cloak or a sheet thrown hastily about her, uttering piercing cries. Another person, a coachman, saw her one evening sitting on a stile in the yard. She seemed a very small woman with blue eyes, long light hair, and wearing a red cloak. Other descriptions will be found in this chapter. By the way, it does not seem to be true that the Banshee exclusively follows families of Irish descent, for the last incident had reference to the death of a member in County Galway, an English family by name and origin. I don't know about that. Anywho, one of the oldest and best known Banshee stories is that related to the memoirs of Lady Fanshawe. And it's an edition written in 1811. In 1642, her husband, Sir Richard, and she chanced to visit a friend, the head of an Irish sept, who resided in his ancient baronial castle, surrounded with a moat. At midnight, she was awakened by a ghastly and supernatural scream, and looking out of bed, beheld in the moonlight a female face and part of a form hovering at the window. The distance from the ground, as well as the circumstances of the moat, excluded the possibility that what she beheld was of this world. The face that a young girl, and rather handsome woman, but pale, and the hair, which was reddish, was loose and disheveled. The dress, which Lady Fanshawe's terror did not prevent her remarking accurately, was that of the ancient Irish. This apparition continued to exhibit itself for some time and then vanished with two shrieks similar to that which had first excited Lady Fanshawe's attention. In the morning, with infinite terror, she communicated to her host that she had witnessed and found him prepared not only to credit but to account for the superstition. "A near relation of my family," he said, "expired last night in this castle. We disguised our certain expectation of the event from you, lest it should throw a cloud over the cheerful reception which was your due. Now, before such an event happens in this family or castle, the female specter whom you have seen is always visible. She is believed to be the spirit of a woman of inferior rank, whom one of my ancestors degraded himself by marrying, and whom afterwards, to expiate the dishonor done to his family, he caused to be drowned in the moat." So many people, man. "In strictness, this woman could hardly be termed a banshee. The motive of the haunting is akin to that of the tale of the Scotch drummer of Cortachy? I'm not sure. Where the spirit of the murdered man haunts the family out of revenge and appears before death." Mr. T.J. Westrup, M.A., has furnished the following story. "My maternal grandmother heard the following tradition from her mother, one of the Miss Ross Lewins, who witnessed the occurrence. Their father, Mr. Harris Ross Lewin, was away in Dublin on law business, and in his absence the young people went off to spend the evening with a friend who lived some miles away. The night was fine and lightsome as they were returning, save at one point where the road ran between trees or high hedges, not far to the west of the old church of Kilchrist. The latter, like many similar ruins, was a simple oblong building, with long side walls and high gables, and its graveyard were unenclosed and lay in an open field. As the party passed down the long dark lane, they suddenly heard in the distance loud keening and clapping of hands, as the country people were accustomed to do when lamenting the dead. The Ross Lewins hurried on and came in sight of the church, on the side wall of which a little gray-haired old woman, clad in a dark cloak, was running to and fro, chanting and wailing and throwing up her arms. The girls were very frightened, but the young men ran forward and surrounded the ruin, and two of them went into the church. The apparition vanished from the wall as they did so. They searched every nook and found no one, nor did anyone pass out. All were now well scared and got home as fast as possible. On reaching their home, their mother opened the door and at once told them that she was in terror about their father, for as she sat looking out the window in the moonlight, a huge raven with fiery eyes lit on the sill and tapped 3 times on the glass. They told her their story, which only added to their anxiety. And as they stood talking, taps came to the nearest window, and they saw the bird again. A few days later, news reached them that Mr. Ross Lewin had died suddenly in Dublin. This occurred in 1776. Mr. Westropp also writes that the sister of a former Roman Catholic bishop told his sisters that she was a little girl, or when she was a little girl, she went out one evening with some other children for a walk. Going down the road, they passed the gate of the principal, Dimmons? Oh Lord, near the town. Sorry. There was a rock or large stone beside the road on which they saw something. Going nearer, they perceived it to be a little dark old woman who had been crying and clapping her hands. Some of them attempted to speak to her, but got frightened and all finally ran home as quickly as they could. Next day, the news came that the gentleman near whose gate the banshee had cried was dead, and it was found on inquiry that he had died at the very hour at which the children had seen the specter. A lady who is in relation to one of the compilers and a member of the County Cork family of English descent sends the two following experiences of a banshee in her family. My mother, when a young girl, was standing looking out the window in their house at Block Rock near Cork. She suddenly saw a white figure standing on a bridge, which was easily visible from the house. The figure waved her arms towards the house, and my mother heard the bitter wailing of the banshee. It lasted some seconds, and then the figure disappeared. Next morning, my grandfather was walking as usual into the city of Cork. He accidentally fell, hit his head against a curbstone, and never recovered consciousness. In March 1900, my mother was very ill, and one evening the nurse and I were with her arranging her bed. We suddenly heard the most extraordinary wailing, which seemed to come in waves, round and under her bed. We naturally looked everywhere to try and find the cause, but in vain. The nurse and I looked at one another, but made no remark, as my mother did not seem to hear it. My mother was downstairs sitting with my father. She heard it and thought some terrible thing had happened to her little boy, who was in bed upstairs. She rushed up and found him sleeping quietly. My father did not hear it. In the house next door, they heard it and ran downstairs thinking something had happened to the servant. But the latter at once said to them, "Did you hear the banshee, Mrs. P?" Mrs. P must be dying. A few years ago, i.e. before 1894, just 1 or 2 years ago, a curious incident occurred in a public school in connection with the belief in the banshee. One of the boys happening to become ill was at once placed in a room by himself where he used to sit all day long. On one occasion, he was being visited by the doctor. He suddenly started up from his seat and affirmed that he heard somebody crying. The doctor, of course, who could hear or see nothing, came to the conclusion that the illness had slightly affected his brain. However, the boy, who appeared quite sensible, still persisted that he heard something crying, and furthermore said, "It is the banshee, as I have heard it before." The following morning, the headmaster received a telegram saying that the boy's brother had been accidentally shot dead. But the banshee is not confined within geographical limitations of Ireland, but that she can follow the fortunes of the family abroad and therein foretell their death is clearly shown by the following story. A party of visitors were gathered together on the deck of a private yacht on one of the Italian lakes, and during a lull in the conversation, one of them said to the owner, "Count, who's the queer-looking woman you have on board? The count replied that there was nobody except the ladies present and the stewardess. But the speaker protested that he was correct, and suddenly, with a scream of horror, he placed his hand before his eyes and exclaimed, "Oh my God, what a face!" For some time he was overcome with terror, and at length reluctantly looked up and cried, "Thank heavens, it's gone." "What was it?" asked the count. "Nothing human," replied the colonel. "Nothing belonging to this world. It was a woman of no earthly shape, with a queer-shaped, gleaming face, a mass of red hair, and eyes that would have been beautiful but for their expression, which was hellish. She had a green hood after the fashion of an Irish peasant." An American lady present suggested that the description tallied with the banshee, with that of the banshee, upon which the count said, "I am an O'Neill. At least, I am descended from one. My family name is, as you know, Nielsini, which little more than a century ago was O'Neill. My great-grandfather served in the Irish Brigade and, on its dissolution at the time of the French Revolution, had the good fortune to escape the general massacre of the officers, and in company with an O'Brien and a McGuire, fled across the frontier and settled in Italy. On his death, his son, who had been born in Italy and was far more Italian than Irish, changed his name to Nielsini, by which name the family has been known ever since. But for all that we are Irish." "The banshee was yours, then?" ejaculated the colonel. "First of all, nobody says ejaculated like that anymore, really. Oh, Lord, what exactly does it mean?" "It means," the count replied solemnly, "the death of someone very nearly associated with me. Pray heaven it is not my wife or daughter." On that score, however, his anxiety was speedily removed, for within 2 hours he was seized with a violent attack of angina pectoris and died before morning. Mr. Elliot O'Donnell, to whose article on banshees we are indebted for the above, adds, "The banshee never manifests itself to the person whose death it is prognosticating. Other people may see or hear it, but the fated one never, so that when everyone present is aware of it but one, the fate of that one may be regarded as pretty well certain." We must now pass on the subject of banshees to the kindred one of the headless coaches, the belief in which is widespread through the country. Apparently, these dread vehicles must be distinguished from the phantom coaches, of which numerous circumstantial tales are also told, the first being harbingers of death, and in this connection are very often attached to certain families. The latter appear to be spectral phenomena, pure and simple, whose appearance does not necessarily portend evil or death. Okay. Two other good stories come from County Clare. One night in April 1821, two servants were sitting up to receive a son of the family, Cornelius O'Callaghan, who had traveled in vain for his health and was returning home. One of them, Halloran, said that the heavy rumble of the coach roused them. The other servant, Burke, stood on the top of the long flight of steps with a lamp and sent Halloran down to open the carriage door. He reached out his hand to do so, saw a skeleton looking out, gave one yell, and fell in a heap. When the badly scared Burke picked himself up, there was no sign or sound of any coach. A little later, the invalid arrived, so exhausted that he died suddenly in the early morning. On the night of December 11th, 1876, a servant of the McNamara's was going his rounds at Inistimon, a beautiful spot in a wooded glen, with a broad stream falling in a series of cascades. In the dark, he heard the rumbling of wheels on the back avenue, and knowing from the hour and place that no mortal vehicle could be coming, concluded that it was a death coach and ran on, opening the gates before it. He had just time to open the third gate and throw himself on his face beside it when he heard a coach go clanking past. On the following day, Admiral Sir Burton McNamara died in London. I believe that's probably quite enough, because there are several more pages of old English stories of banshees. Oof. So, as I said, it had been quite difficult to find what I felt were genuine stories, even if they were fabricated at one point or another. It felt to me like some of the older stories were more genuine, at least. Some people actually theorize that the Banshee legend represents Ireland herself. Ireland is written about as a woman and should always be protected by her sons. And then Ireland or the Banshee weeps at the loss of her flesh and blood. So, that being said, there are also animals associated with the Banshee legend, including hooded crows, as in the story from the book I wrote. Red, not road. What on earth? Okay. Crows, stoats, hares, and weasels. There's a theory that the Banshee's wailing is from either a barn owl or a crying fox. I'm going to attempt to play those for you now. Pray this works. That was the cry of a barn owl. I believe I've got it in here. I'm sorry for the volume. I'll try to tone that section down a little bit. Here's a fox. As you can tell, both of those sounds would be terrifying to hear if you're out in nature. However, I believe that if you live in an area that is populated with these creatures, you would be well aware of the sounds that they make. So I don't necessarily find this to be an accurate explanation. If this tales only came from people visiting, then maybe. But not all Banshee legend stories are from visitors. A lot of them are from people who live in whatever area they're speaking about. So, yeah. Okay, so interestingly, there are two stories associated with the term banshee in the United States, though I don't think they quite count as an actual banshee. But just for fun, I've written a very brief synopsis of what those are. In the Badlands of South Dakota, a lonely hill called Watchdog Butte is home to a specter. She appears at night when the moon is bright and high in the sky. She approaches anyone passing through and stares unblinking at them. If someone tries to talk to her, she throws her arms in the sky and begins to shriek. Her inhuman wailing can be heard for miles in every direction. The banshee will then suddenly vanish, and the vacuum of silence leaves a ringing in your ears. The Banshee of the Badlands is sometimes accompanied by a skeleton, no less. The skeleton will approach camps that are playing music, and it will silently enjoy the music and bob its head along to the melodies from the shadows. However, if you offer an instrument to this ghoulish skeleton, it will proceed to play a hypnotic tune and lure you off into the wilderness to die. I don't think I'll be camping in South Dakota. Sorry, guys. There is also the Banshee of Tar River in North Carolina. In the county of Edgecombe, just outside of the town of Tarboro, you can find the Tar River and the apparition that stalks its shores. Dave Warner lived during colonial times, and he opened a sawmill there. Mr. Warner did relatively well for himself, but unfortunately, the British found out about his pro-revolution activities. For Mr. Warner had supplied the U.S. militia with much-needed supplies. The British found him, bound him in chains, and threw him into the Tar River. After his death in August of 1781, the Banshee appeared and scared off his murderers that had taken up residence at his mill. It is said that she keeps people away from the banks of the Tar Hill River, or sorry, the Tar River, to this day. The tale of the Banshee could be frightening or comforting, depending on how you look at it. Whether she is real or not, it's an amazing piece of folklore. I would like to believe in her. I feel like she is at least comforting in, I would say, the fair majority of the tales about her. That way you can prepare for death. I also don't like the explanation of the animal noises, as I've said. I live in a rural area and I know the noises that are often made there, so if I hear one of those noises, I don't just start shouting different folklore creatures and be like, oh, this is clearly, whatever. What do you think? Do you believe in banshees? Thank you for listening. If you have any experiences with a banshee yourself or have any spooky stories you would like to share, feel free to email me at eeriepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Instagram at eeriepodcasthattie, and you can follow me on Twitter at hattie_o. I've been live tweeting movies there recently, so it might be funny, might not, I don't know. I mostly just try to entertain myself. You can find some awesome merchandise at my Etsy shop by searching for Eerie Podcast. If you would like to get extra content and donate to the show, my website is patreon.com/eeriepodcast. And finally, if I get this up in the next few hours, please consider voting for me for the Inked Magazine 2022 Cover Girl Contest. Yeah, it would just be helpful. All of this will be linked in the show notes along with my sources. I hope you keep it creepy and have a wonderful day. Bye.